30 seconds into the fourth quarter. They fake the draw to Bell. Mahomes will launch it for the end zone. Wide open, Tyreek Hill! Touchdown, Kansas City! He could be playing Madden in his easy chair in his man cave for an easy touchdown. Carolina blows coverage, and the Chiefs have the coveted two-possession lead at 14:23 to go in the game. First down and goal to go at the two, trailing 14-6. Now Mahomes in motion, comes back to the ball, and catches, fires for the end zone, caught, touchdown! Kansas City, DeMarcus Robinson on a two-yard touchdown pass. And for Mahomes, the 98th touchdown pass of his career, the 19th consecutive game with such a strike, but not a play like that one, a new wrinkle.
Chiefs win yesterday over the Carolina Panthers 33-31. We tried to warn Chiefs fans on Friday that that was a dangerous game.
Yeah.
We tried. I said the Chiefs wouldn't cover. You had a backdoor cover. I had them not covering. The reason I was worried about that game was, one, that Carolina can run the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Two, they have a quarterback that doesn't force the ball and make a lot of mistakes. And they have nothing to lose. Those are the three reasons why I thought. And the Chiefs had the bye week on the horizon looking ahead to the Raiders. So because of those reasons, I thought the Chiefs were in for a tough game yesterday. And I really wasn't surprised too much. And I've been waiting for somebody in this league to just say, you know what? We're going for it. We're going to try everything that we have in our playbook to beat the Chiefs. I've been waiting for some coach to have the kahunas to do it. I have never understood why there hasn't been one.
Yeah.
John Harbaugh tried at one point last year, Arrowhead, but kind of stopped short. And Matt Rhule, for the most part yesterday, did it all the way through the game, for the most part. There was one time he had a 4th and 5. I didn't understand punting. Go for it. And I didn't understand the lack of urgency on the final touchdown drive that they had that took forever. Apparently nobody in the media wanted to ask that question of Matt Rhule. Apparently I was the only one, along with Dusty, that was like, what? It reminded me of the Alex Smith touchdown drive against the Patriots in the playoffs that took forever and there was no sense of urgency. And I texted my buddy Seren Petro about that, and he goes, well, that's the difference between good and great quarterbacks. I'm like, a good quarterback can't call two plays and run them back-to-back without huddling?
Yeah.
I'm confused by that. Because I think Teddy Bridgewater is not a dumb guy. I think he's a smart guy. Alex Smith's a smart guy.
Right,
so you're telling me that they couldn't run a couple of plays before a two-minute warning so they could score before the 2 minutes so they could utilize the 2-minute timeout?
Yeah.
Listen, if I'm a Carolina Panther, I'm ticked about that. As a Chiefs fan, I'm tickled pink. I was watching the game going, thanks, keep taking as much time as you want. I couldn't believe how lackadaisical. They huddled after every single play on that 11-play drive that took 5.5 minutes off the clock. So I was like, wow, you've been so aggressive and playing the win, and all of a sudden it's like, do you realize you're down 2 scores?
Yeah.
I was, and that's where I was saying the same thing. I was yelling at Andy Reid back in, what was that, 17 or whenever it was in New England, when I'm like, dude, you need 2 scores. Why are you taking forever to score here with Alex Smith at quarterback? It's frustrating, but it luckily my team was on the right side this time. So the Chiefs do win. They outlast the Panthers 33-31. Chiefs are 8-1. The Panthers are now 3-6. We'll talk about the Chiefs game. We'll hit upon the Chiefs, and then we'll go to high school football playoffs after that. Then we'll go to reviewing week 9 of the NFL season and also college football. Bad weekend for KU and K-State and Nebraska, and the number one team in the land went down to defeats. And also there's a new NASCAR champion as well, but a familiar last name. We begin with the Chiefs. You know, when I'm watching this game yesterday, the Panthers took it right to the Chiefs right off the bat. They go on a long drive, took about 9 minutes off the clock. That's the way you have to keep Mahomes and the Chiefs offense off the field. Ball control. However, what we have seen with most teams that tried this the last couple of years is it, all, except with the exception of the New England Patriots in the AFC title game, which that came down to just not getting a coin flip.
Mm.
If the Chiefs got the coin flip and won that game, then we would even say that game didn't work the way New England wanted it to. And that is smash-mouth football, limiting possession time for your offense. And eventually it could catch up to you. If you play 3 or 4 games in a row and the defense has to play 2/3 of the game, the defense is going to get worn out. We saw that somewhat at times last year. But, you know, I know some Chiefs fans are worried a little bit because they barely beat Carolina. Carolina is a much better team than the record indicates. Another reason why I thought they'd give the Chiefs a good game is I've seen them play. And they have not been blown out. They have lost a lot of close games. You know, the Chargers are a team that loses a lot of close games. The Panthers and the Chargers are much better than the record indicates. But after, you know, 8-9 games, you say the record is what your record is. I get that. But they do put themselves in position to win games. They just don't finish, neither the Panthers nor the Chargers. They don't quite get over the hump. And so while I'm watching this game yesterday, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking to myself, towards the end of the contest, and when they lined up for a 67-yard field goal, which I didn't think had any chance of being made.
No.
But that was their best chance, by the way. I don't blame Rule for doing that, because I don't think that the Hail Mary would have worked either. But I don't even know if Bridgewater could have thrown it that far. Maybe. But when I'm thinking here before they line up for this kick, which I'm expecting to be missed, is the Chiefs barely won. That's true. But it's a win. You don't count it as barely, or you won by a lot like against the Jets. A win is a win in this league. Ask the Pittsburgh Steelers, who barely won yesterday as well. So when I'm watching this game and that kick is getting ready to be the kick before it gets lined up to the kick, the 67-yarder, I'm like, think about this for a second. The Chiefs didn't even try to run the ball. Carolina didn't turn the ball over one time in the game. Carolina picked up 3 fourth downs, including a 4th and 14. Carolina had a fake punt, executed it. Butker missed a 48-yard field goal and an extra point. More on him in a moment. There's 4 points that the Chiefs didn't even get.
Yeah.
The Panthers had time of possession 2-1, 39 minutes to the Chiefs 21 or 22, something like that. Carolina had a onside kick that ended up not costing them any points there. You actually did. But if they kicked off, I think the Chiefs would have scored anyway. So I thought the onside kick was perfect time to pull it off. Mm. And if it bounces one more yard, they do pull it off. I love the aggressive play calling by Carolina. Carolina did a lot of things against the book yesterday. They did a lot of great things. The Chiefs still won.
Yeah.
That's what I take out of that game yesterday. I'm not saying the Chiefs are invincible. They're not.
No.
But the Carolina Panthers, in order to have a 67-yard field goal at the buzzer to win the game, to get to that point, they had to convert 3 fourth downs, including a 4th and 14. They had to have the Chiefs kicker miss a field goal and an extra point. They had to convert the 3 fourth downs. They had to go have the ball for 38 minutes of the game. They didn't commit a single turnover. Special teams was solid. They had the fake punt. They had an onside kick. And their quarterback played fairly well. They got Christian McCaffrey back. He was involved. And they still lost. And that's what I take out of this game. The Chiefs didn't play their best. Carolina, I thought, played pretty well. And the Chiefs, and the Chiefs still won. Carolina didn't have that glaring big major mistake. They didn't have that, you know, pick six or gave up a kick return for a score or turned it over inside the five. You know, they didn't have any big major mistake. I thought the play that changed the game was the 51-yard field goal that doinked the upright, which, by the way, looked good all the way. I couldn't believe it hit the upright. It was no good for Carolina.
Yeah.
Neither could the kicker. I mean, that wind was a factor yesterday. There's no question about it. But that's what I take out of this game yesterday is the Chiefs didn't even try to run the ball, which they didn't have to. This whole thing, the old school thinking in football doesn't apply anymore, and that is, you got to be balanced on offense to win. No, you don't. Not in today's day. Not when the rules are in favor of the offense and you can just breathe on a guy and it's pass interference, which I saw a lot of that yesterday for a lot of games I was watching. I don't know how you can be at play corner in this league anymore. Anytime there's any kind of jousting between both guys, it's always the tie, as they call it. With both guys jousting, it's always on the defense. So The rules are set up to play offense and to throw the ball. The rules aren't set up to run the ball. The rules are set to throw the ball. And when you got a guy like Patrick Mahomes, why wouldn't you throw the ball? And the Chiefs have shown, if you want to let us run the ball, we'll run it down your throat. See the Buffalo game. You want us to just go ahead and throw it all the time? See the Jets game? See this game? It doesn't seem to faze the Chiefs, whatever way they want to go. And I tell you what, Andy Reid doesn't seem to be too concerned about the balance. That's for sure.
No, not at all.
We'll hear that in a moment. But yesterday, the Chiefs defense did not play well in the first half, but only allowed 17 points. You may say only allowed 17 points. Listen, if you hold anybody in this league, if the Chiefs hold anybody in this league to 17 or fewer in the first half, they're going to have a chance to win. You know why? Because number 15 is the quarterback of their offense. Okay? I don't care if the Chiefs give up 20 in the first half. You're going to have to score 30 or more to beat the Chiefs, more than likely. And the Raiders did that. The Raiders scored 40 and beat the Chiefs. That's the only team that's beat the Chiefs. Mahomes was a little bit off. He missed a wide-open Hill in the end zone. Him and Hill weren't on the same page on another pass over the middle near the goal line. and yet he still figured it out. The Chiefs ran for a putrid 30 yards on 12 carries, but they still had 33 points. Mahomes was 30 of 45 for 372 and four touchdowns. He was sacked just one time. He had all day to throw most of the game. Mahomes' fastest quarterback in the history of the league to 100 career touchdown passes in 40 games. The previous record, 44 by Dan Marino. Mahomes now has 100 touchdown passes on his career, 19 interceptions. You want to guess how many interceptions Dan Marino had in his 44 games to get to 100 touchdowns?
I actually looked it up last night, but I can't remember what it was now. It was more than 40, I know that.
Yes. 44.
Yeah, I couldn't remember how much more than 40, but yeah, I knew. And even before I looked it up, I knew it was going to be at least 35.
Right. And it was on a tweet, and I'm trying to find it here, and it probably isn't there because I should have retweeted it. I didn't have time here. By the way, Christian McCaffrey, that shoulder injury, he may miss some more time. When someone's hitting him, you could tell. My son thought maybe a collarbone injury, but I said I thought it was a shoulder, and they're saying it's a shoulder. But anyway, it's not even close. Of all the quarterbacks that have hit, the fastest 10 quarterbacks in NFL history to get to 100 career touchdown passes, Marino's on the low end of the interceptions there with 44. Yeah. Mahomes has 19.
It's
25 interception difference. Speaking of 25, Mahomes has 25 touchdowns and one interception. Can somebody please explain to me how Russell Wilson, I think after yesterday, he's not the leader anymore for the MVP race. Wilson had four turnovers yesterday, and Mahomes had four touchdown passes. Mahomes is on track and on pace to duplicate what he did in his first year as a starter, almost, except for the yardage in regards to passing. He might be a little bit under the 5,000.
Yeah.
What's not to like about that if you're a Chiefs fan?
Nothing.
I mean, what he's doing is, you know, he's making it look so easy. I mean, casually threw for 372 yards yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, at the end of the day, you look at his numbers and you're like, oh, yeah, you know, I mean, yeah, what do you think about Mahomes today? I think got around 300. 415. What? He threw for 415? Yes. 415. It was like watching the Clemson quarterback the other day. Tony Dungy said it. That's the quietest 400-yard passing day I've ever seen.
Yeah.
That's the way offenses are now. 400 yards is a quiet day. That tells you all you need to know about balance. Okay? Do you need to run the ball when the weather's really bad? Yeah, that's true. But that doesn't happen a ton. And a lot of games are indoors anymore or on turf, things like that. Kelce, 10 catches, 159 yards. Hill, 9 catches, 113, two touchdowns. Screen game was not effective. They should just scrap the screen game. And there was no need for the screen game. That's the thing I didn't understand about the screen passes yesterday. Carolina wasn't getting to Mahomes. If they're getting to Mahomes, that's when you bring out the screen game.
Yeah.
So I thought that was overdone. I did have a little bit, I don't know if it's a concern, but I wasn't thrilled by the play calling, and obviously I didn't execute when they had a chance to close the game. I mean, the Chiefs needed to close that game. The offense had a chance to shut the door. You know, first play, give it to Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell wasn't even part of the game all day long, hardly even played. And all of a sudden, the biggest drive of the game to try to seal it, they put Le'Veon Bell in. And I don't think that's fair to Le'Veon Bell, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And he carries it. There's a huge spider right there. I want to take care of that. You want to take care of that guy? There's a do something with that guy.
There we go.
But you never know what will happen during a sports ticket show.
He's crushed. We
took the spider out. PETA, come get us. So the Chiefs, when they had that last chance to close it out, when they did an onside kick and the Chiefs recovered it, no gain to Bell, and then they ran RPO, and the Panthers are ready for that RPO with Mahomes with a naked boot. They were ready for that all game long. 6-yard loss, and then an incomplete pass, and if I remember correctly. And that was that. 27 seconds is all they burned off the clock. Panthers had all their timeouts. And so that is, I think more often than not, the Chiefs will close a game like that. But yesterday, they really hadn't established a running game, so it wasn't really going to happen. And then the defense, maybe it's a blessing in disguise, the defense had to close the deal. I'll tell you, though, if Carolina had another 15 seconds, I think Carolina would have kicked a field goal and won the game. And they should have never had a chance to win the game if Butker makes his extra points, which more on that in a moment. But let's go back to Carolina's game plan. They did what I've been waiting to see a coach do for a very long time. Fake punt, which, by the way, the Chiefs, do they need to understand that maybe somebody could fake punt it? Remember the Tennessee game last year in the AFC title game where you knew why would they punt it and the Chiefs still weren't prepared for that? We talk about great Dave Tobes and special teams, but they are so vulnerable to fakes.
Yeah.
So that's something they really need to clean up. So the fake punt, which was huge, big gainer for Carolina, smart as heck. The onside kick, which was, even though it didn't work, it was a great call. The Chiefs completely caught off guard. And if that ball bounces one more time, that's Carolina ball. They had a 4th-and-4 they converted, the 4th-and-7, I think it was, a 4th-and-14 where if Rashad Fenton, I saw people ripping Ben Neiman. What Ben Neiman supposed to do? The quarterback jumped in the air, Neiman hit him, he fell forward. It's Rashad Fenton who's diving with his
can't
left shoulder. Quarterback. Wrap him up. Just go hit him. A form tackle, and Bridgewater wouldn't even be able to jump into the air and get the first down. So people are ripping Ben Neiman for that play. No, no, no. The problem was Rashad Fenton, or you could say the fact that the Chiefs had nobody up the middle defensively, although you don't expect Bridgewater to run it on a 4th-and-14, in fairness. But to me, if you want to blame anybody, it's Rashad Fenton. You know, who taught a guy to just throw their shoulder at somebody and put your arms to your side like you don't have any? That's what that was. That was poor. Yeah. And I'm getting tired of seeing that type of tackling, even in the professional ranks. The Carolina had the ball 38 minutes, 22 seconds. So they kept the Chiefs offense on the side of the field on the sideline. Since the start of the 2019 season, NFL teams have been 19-2 in non-overtime games where they had the ball for 38 or more minutes. 19-2 when they have it 38 or more. Carolina, 435 yards. You sit here and go, well, the Chiefs really didn't do good against the run. Actually, Carolina only had 104 yards rushing. They threw for 331. But let's go to a couple of things before we hear from Andy Reid and Matt Rhule. I am confused by being so aggressive in a game, and then when you're down 9 and you get the ball with 7:40 to play in the game, you should get more than just 2 possessions and 1 with under a minute to go when you start at 7:40. And I know, and Carolina's got some of the best receivers in the league. They scored with 1:55 left. When there was about 2.5 minutes left, there was no urgency to score to utilize the 2-minute timeout.
Yeah.
They would have had 4 timeouts had they done that. I don't understand it. Then all of a sudden, right when it was about 2:05, like, oh, we better hurry up and get this off. Well, yeah, but then you waste the kickoff way to make it past the 2-minute warning. You need to score above the 2-minute mark, not at the 2-minute mark. And then they score with 1:55, 1:53 left. Well, then you not only did you waste a lot of time off the clock and took forever, but you also shorten the game for your team. Like, I understand keeping Mahomes off the field, but not when you're down 9.
Yeah.
I didn't understand it. And no one in the media wants to question that. Nobody questioned it. Carolina news beat writers didn't question it, didn't ask about it. Kansas City didn't ask about it. Apparently, I'm in the minority here. If you're playing to win the game, shouldn't you have 2 plays called at some point in time on that drive?
Yes.
So you can at least score before the 2-minute timeout. You have to utilize that 4th timeout. Because think about this for a second. Had Carolina scored with 2:10 remaining instead of 1:53, which you may say 17 seconds is no big deal. No, it's 17 seconds and a timeout, which is huge.
Yeah.
If Carolina gets the score with 2:10 to go, they have at least 2 or 3 more plays, plus a timeout they can run on that final drive, which they still were able to get it all the way down to the Chiefs, what was it, 45? Just past midfield?
Yeah.
I mean, if they would have thrown another out, which they tried with 4 seconds to go, which was a smart play, by the way, but it was incomplete. Had they had another 10, 15 seconds, or just simply a timeout, that changes everything on that final drive. Now, do the Chiefs call plays a little differently in that situation? Knowing Carolina might have 1 timeout left on their final possession?
Yeah.
Maybe. It's possible. I do understand that.
Yeah.
But I was amazed at the lackadaisical, there was just, they huddled every single play. And this is a veteran quarterback. This is not a rookie quarterback in Sam Darnold. He's not a rookie anymore, Sam Darnold, but it's not Tua.
Yeah.
I mean, this is Teddy Bridgewater. He's been in the league for a while. He's a smart dude. So I didn't understand that part. Everything Matt Rhule did, really, other than that, I totally understood. I thought he called a really unbelievable game to give his team a chance to win. Here's Matt Rhule, the head coach of Carolina, who I think is going to be a really good NFL coach. He coached in the NFL before he went to Baylor as an assistant. Baylor, he did a really good job at Baylor. He's a winner. Here's Matt Rhule on the aggressive play calls yesterday.
It was just, down in their tight. You know, we felt like, looking back over the course of our year, what's kept us from winning more games has been not moving the football, but it's been, you know, scoring touchdowns, not field goals. And went for the 4th-and-4, you know, the punt fake to me, you know, it was just, we thought we had it. And it was one that if we didn't have the look, you know, we could check out of it. So obviously those things that are well-designed like that make it a lot easier to execute. You know, they were lined up 15 yards off the ball. That's something that we practice all the time. you know, we were down two scores. I said, when we score, you know, we've been watching it all game. We felt like we had it. I just said, hey, when they, you know, when we score here, whether it's a touchdown or field goal, you know, do we think we have it? We thought we had it, so we went for it. And the hope was if we didn't get it, you know, hold them to a field goal, and, you know, because we scored a touchdown and still make it a one-score game. So we thought we had it, just the ball didn't go 10 yards. You know, if the ball goes 10 yards there, I think we probably recover it, and, you know, momentum is on our side. Yet we came to win. We came to play to win. We wanted to get a win and tried to play that way.
Listen, if you listen to this show on a regular basis, what was I talking about last Monday, Dusty, after the Jets game? Why aren't the Jets going for it?
Yeah.
They got nothing to lose. They're 0-7.
Yeah.
You had a 4th-and-6, and there's a offsides, and you tack it on to the punt. On the punt return against the Chiefs, moving back 5 yards. No, you replay the down 4th-and-1 at your own 25. Yeah. You're already behind. You're a horrible team. You got nothing to lose. That tells me the Jets don't care.
Yeah.
Tells me the Jets are tanking on purpose. Or Adam Gase is a horrible coach, and probably all of the above.
All of it, yeah.
This shows me this is what the Jets should have done, and every team that's an underdog to the Chiefs should do. And I'm not screaming that I want teams to do this because I think it makes the Chiefs vulnerable. But if they're the best team in football, and I think the Chiefs are the best team in football, and I think they are the best team in the AFC. And the NFC, every week we try to figure out who the best team. One week it's the Bucs, one week it's Seattle. Now it looks like it's maybe the Saints. One week it was the Packers. There's nobody in the NFC that freaks me out if I'm a Chiefs fan. And the Steelers did not look very good yesterday. But, you know, in fairness, people could say the Chiefs didn't look great either. I just don't understand how coaches, they get paid so much money. And I understand coaching is not easy. And I know it's easy to sit here behind the microphone and go, well, you know, why don't you go for it? I don't. Here's the thing that really drives me nuts about coaches. It's like they start out aggressive. And then all of a sudden they chicken out. It's like they put all their chips into the middle of the poker table. They have both hands on the chips, right? And they take one hand away, and they're just about to put them all in. And like, oh, wait a minute. Wait, I'll pull back about 25% of those chips just to be safe. Wait a minute. Are you in or are you not?
Yeah.
It's like dipping your toe in the deep end of the water. Ooh, that water's kind of cold. How about just jumping in? You're all in. You have to do things that are contrary to the usual old normal when it comes to beating the Kansas City Chiefs. As long as 15's on the field or on the sideline, you have to do things a little bit differently. And Carolina is the first team and the first coach, Matt Rhule, to do that more than anybody else. There was a 4th-and-5. He didn't stick all the way in, though. I think he should have gone for it there. I was surprised he didn't. 4th-and-14. By the way, the announcing crew at Fox, Daryl Johnson, okay. Kevin Burkhart, horrible. Yesterday, and I like Kevin Burkhart, but he football, I don't know how many times he called the Chiefs when he was trying to call them the Panthers. He got his names mixed up. Then he's sitting here talking about, before halftime, well, we'll see if the Chiefs go for a 64-yard field goal at Butker. Dude, your monitor shows right there, Mahomes is in the huddle. Do you think they're going to kick a field goal? Mahomes is in the huddle? Of course not. It was, and then there was one play where it completely glitched out on Fox's broadcast. We didn't even see Clyde Edwards-Helaire one run. Completely blipped out. So I digress, but they weren't on top of this. The announcers never talked about the lack of urgency on the final drive. They didn't talk about lots of different things that they could have talked about in this game. And I'm sitting here, they didn't focus, didn't even mention about the lack of running game for the Chiefs. Didn't even address that, which, you know, probably something that'd be a talking point. But they didn't talk about you have to be all in or go all in on what you can do in today's game. And I just think that's people that are stuck in the old way of thinking. The NFL is a different game now. College football is completely a different game. You know how I can prove that? See Alabama and the SEC. It's scoring a ton of points just like the Big 12. It's just the Big 12 was ahead of the curve with all the scoring of the points. And now that offense has spread like COVID down to the SEC. And the game is about offense. And people talking about the Chiefs gave up 435 yards. I'll tell you again, who cares? You won. Honestly, you won. You can give me all the stats. The Chiefs are 29th against the run, and I can come back with their 4th against the pass. Well, they're giving up 5 yards a carry or whatever it is, and I can come back and say they're the 3rd best scoring defense in the league, and that's the only stat that matters, and I would win that argument.
Yes.
Because at the end of the day yesterday, you know who had more yards rushing? Or excuse me. Yeah. You know who had more yards rushing yesterday? Carolina.
Yes.
Do you know who had more total yards yesterday?
Carolina.
Do you know who had more offensive plays?
Carolina.
Do you know who had more time of possession?
Carolina by a lot.
Do you know who had fewer amount of turnovers?
Carolina.
Carolina. All of that stuff.
Yeah.
And they lost. It's like Baltimore running for 200 yards and they lost, you know, by 10 in Kansas City the 1 year. Like, what was it? 5 last year. And that wasn't even that close. We get caught up in this. Well, you know, you run the ball. Listen, the Chiefs can get the ball for 20 minutes and still score 40 points.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? Hold the ball for 50 minutes? It's probably impossible to do that.
Yeah, that's stretching it pretty good.
So if you're going to be in, be all in. And Matt Rhule was the closest to being all in that I've seen a coach ever against the Chiefs since Mahomes was quarterback, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
because right at the beginning of the game, I was like, go for this fourth down.
And they did.
Went for the fourth down.
Yep.
Like you said, the fake punt, you know, onside kick didn't work out the way they wanted it to.
Fourth
but,
and 14.
You know, it's still the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and at that point, you have to go for it on fourth and 14, I feel like.
Well, that's where the announcers are completely, they're like, oh, this is pretty gutsy and da-da-da-da-da, yeah. And you should punt the ball away. I'm like, what are you talking about?
If you're playing an aggressive game and you're trying to win that game, it's too late. You can't punt that.
No, but the announcers thought they should have.
You give it back to Patrick Mahomes, and you didn't know. That's just not, it's not something you do.
Fox announcers haven't watched much Chiefs football,
yeah, they were,
so they were not good.
Not
good.
Not at all.
Yeah. Pam Oliver wasn't good either. Sideline. I don't know what she brought to the table yesterday. And then she cut off Mahomes in the post game interview. I don't know if that was a delay in her ear or what, but she's looking right at Mahomes and he's talking. She cut him off. It's almost like somebody told her, we got to go back to the pregame or the post game show. It's like, seriously? Did you see that?
I didn't actually.
He was still talking.
I left to hit the facility after the game was over, so I did not see that, actually.
Yeah, he was still talking. He was close to wrapping it up, but it's like, okay, I guess we're in a hurry here. Really, it was really weird. The Fox broadcast was not good at all. So the Chiefs win. They survive a scare. We'll talk about one mate. If you're really going to be worried about anything as a Chiefs fan, it's not the defense. I'm going to tell you right now, it's not the defense. You can be concerned about it. I'm not saying you shouldn't. It's not about closing the game. It's not about the running game. I'll tell you what you should be worried about. The biggest thing you should be concerned about the Chiefs going forward. That's coming up in a moment. But first, let's hear from Andy Reid, the thoughts on the win against Carolina.
I was proud of the offense and the job that they did. EB had a great game plan, and the guys, I thought, executed it well. I think overall, both sides of the ball, probably too many penalties. We need to take care of business there. But we'll keep working on that. The bottom line is, I mentioned this to you guys earlier, that this is a good football team. They're good on special teams. They're good on offense and defense. They're well coached, and they've got good talent. So their future is bright. And so we knew we were going to have our hands full today. And I was just proud of the guys bearing down.
Okay, so Andy's pretty happy. I mean, it was a tough game. I think they knew coming in it'd probably be tough, but until you actually play him. There was the really unique Patrick Mahomes in motion play that scored a touchdown, which I loved it. I was like, oh, boy, this is going to be good. As soon as he started moving, I'm like, oh, this is going to be good. What are they doing? But I can't wait. This is going to be good. And it was good. It was a touchdown pass. You heard Mitch Holtis call on the Chiefs Network, which you can hear the Chiefs every week on Z96.3 The Lake. And here's Andy Reid on that motion touchdown pass, the throw to DeMarcus Robinson for a score.
Yeah, so the last 3 weeks, Pat's been messing around with it. And so I told him, I said, we're going to put it in. And he looked at me like I was crazy. But he'd been doing it, and it looked good. So it looks good. Let's try it. And so we tried it. He goes down there during special teams, and he was messing around with a couple things. So we put it in, and it worked.
Hey, we're just goofing around. What do you think, Coach? I'm going to run in motion, and then here's Mahomes explaining how this was put into effect.
You see me, I think, in training camp before practice, and I'm taking snaps with the centers. And so, obviously, I'm doing formations and stuff like that. And I started going in motion, and then after that, I had to go to Tom Melvin, our tight ends coach, and asked if it was legal for me to be in motion. And he said, as long as everyone was set. And so then after I got that, I took it to special teams and started working with Trav and Tyreek on these different plays that we could run from it. And I had to start throwing like little hints to Coach Reid that we needed to try it out. And it finally got it in, and it worked out well.
It's like playground football, man. It's playground football. I love it. I love it. It's about having fun. And the Chiefs are obviously having fun, especially on offense. without even running the ball.
Yeah.
Without even running the ball.
That play is so tough, too. Like, if you've never seen something like that, how do you, like, he's coming in motion to your side, so you're on
the. Can you blame the corner that lost Robinson on that play?
No, not at all. Like, you're on the right side, you know.
Right.
As the defense is looking at it, and he's coming to your side, and all of a sudden he's in motion, just takes that snap and just right away spins back over.
So you're peeking at the quarterback, yeah. And while that happens, the receiver just makes a casual, I'm going to run block type of thing, and then boom, he's
fast. Yeah, I mean, you can't, if you've never seen something like that, it's hard to defend.
It's great
play
design.
Now, if it's on film and you run it too many times, then that corner's going to know, well, he curls out of this all the time and then rolls back the other way, so we're not going to, I'm going to stay with my guy here. I'm not going to worry about him.
It's just great detail.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch when it works, especially.
Definitely.
Here's Mahomes after Carolina took 9 minutes off the clock about his team bouncing back, coming out onto the field and getting going.
We knew that coming in. I mean, if you watch the tape of the Panthers play, I mean, every single game, no matter who they play, they've been right in it. So we knew it was going to be a dogfight. We knew it was going to be something we're going to have to bring our best game. And obviously, we've learned from our previous experiences of we've had teams that have kind of held the ball out of the offense's hand and try to really milk the clock. And we understand that every opportunity and every drive is crucial. And so we learned from that of losses we've taken in the past, and we went out there and found a way to win the game today.
Okay, so Mahomes is playing at a high level. There's no doubt about it. Last 2 weeks, he's thrown for over 800 yards, completing about 70% of his passes. He's got 9 touchdowns, no interceptions. Andy Reid obviously knows that Mahomes is playing some pretty good ball right now.
I think you're seeing the best of him right now. And some of it you might not see. So the things he does behind the scenes, and then whether it's look-offs, the small, subtle things. You heard Richard Sherman talk about it the other day, just little intricacies of the offense and how he handles it. And everybody has full confidence in him doing his job. So I think EB would, you know, say the same thing standing up here, that we have full confidence that he'll do what he needs to do to win a game. I mean, that's how he operates. And whether he's doing it during the week by showing up and working his tail off to make sure he knows the opponent to what you see on game day.
Let me repeat. Patrick Mahomes, through 9 games this year, has 25 touchdown passes and 1 interception. 25 touchdowns and 1 interception. And it's not because he's scared to throw interceptions that he doesn't throw interceptions. He'll wing it. He'll sling it. He's just as smart when he does it. And, does he dodge one here and there? Sure.
Oh, every quarterback probably does. But.
No doubt about it. He really liked to go to Kelce and Hill yesterday. Kelce with 10 catches, 159. Hill, 9 catches, 113. I think there was a combined targets of about 30 of the 45 passes at Kelce and Hill, which is really abnormal because Mahomes usually spreads around to a lot of different guys. Of course, Sammy Watkins was out again yesterday. Your right tackle, Schwartz, was out. Then Rimmers went out, and Yasser Durant got burned a couple times. And Mahomes just stepped and avoided the pass rush and threw a 44-yard pass to Travis Kelce. And then Durant settled down, did a decent job when he was in there. And then they were trying to go throw a pass to Rimmers when he came back in on a tackle-eligible play, which they called holding, which was huge. That allowed the Chiefs' drive to continue there. Here's Mahomes on all the targets to Kelce and Hill yesterday.
You said 30, huh? They're two special players. They're both, they really understand the offense. They know how to get themselves open, and they're hard guys to cover one-on-one. And so whenever they're working like that, we're a hard offense to stop, and you see guys that – when they get their number called too, they make plays as well. And so I think it's a combination of everything, of them being as skilled as they are, them being as smart as they are, and then other guys, whenever they get their number called, making plays as well.
Here's Reed on the Kelce and Hill combinations.
Yeah, I thought Travis was unbelievable. He had one of those days. Just anytime big play needed, both he and Tyreek made them. And, so proud of those two and how mature they are and how they've handled everything and grown as men. Most of all. So, but Trav had an all pro day, which he is. But we never take that stuff for granted.
Okay. So Andy, are you worried about this lack of running game? 2 straight weeks, you're throwing the ball a lot with the MVP.
So, we played 2 good run teams in a row here. Both these two are pretty solid up front. So we felt like the pass game we could execute that maybe even better than the run game. Although we had some production there and, we're going to try to do what works that particular week and roll with it. So we've got good running backs, but if teams are going to try to take that away, then, they got to also think about the throw game. So.
Okay, so the Chiefs do win the game 33-31 yesterday and dodge a bullet, no doubt. And I'll tell you the biggest bullet they dodged, and that is their kicker. This is the concern I have now with the Kansas City Chiefs. This is not one of those little slump things. Harrison Butker has missed six extra points this year. Six. And yesterday, he double-doinked one. And if you've noticed the last couple weeks, Butker's been kicking from different hash marks, not straight on. I've noticed this. Every single time Butker goes to kick an extra point, I have been documenting this in my head. And yesterday it made sense because of the way the wind was blowing. From when he was kicking towards one end zone, I knew he was on the right hash. And then he was on the left hash for a field goal that he drilled when the wind was blowing left to right, because that's just the way his kicks are. And when Butker misses, he almost always misses to the left. Have you noticed that? So when he lined up for the 48-yard field goal, and I believe that was after he had already missed the extra point, but I may be mistaken. It might have been the other way around. But anyway, he had the double doink extra point that he missed. And I know the wind was a factor. But a 48-yard field goal for Butker, I'm not saying it's horrible that you miss a 48-yard field goal. I'm not saying that at all. But I want people from now on to pay attention to where the ball is kicked, from what hash mark or where on the field for Butker. Don't worry about how far the kick is. If it's 30, 40, 50, 60 yards, I want you to focus on where the Chiefs line up to kick, because they are experimenting right now, because they're trying to figure out what's the best way for Butker to make extra points. And that's got to be concerning. Because yesterday, when they had to settle for that 48-yard field goal, they couldn't place the ball where they wanted. It was just they failed on third down. It was on that side of the field. So they had to kick from the right hash mark, and the wind was actually moving from left to right, and Butker still pulled it left. And when he lined up for that kick, I told my son on the couch, I kid you not, I said, he's going to miss this left. I said, it's from the right hash. He's going to pull it. Instead of playing it from the right side, because the wind's going left to right, he should have been trying to probably drill it right down the middle, and maybe he was. But whatever the case is, he has a tendency to pull things left when he kicks from the right hash mark. I've watched this over and over this year. When he tends to miss kicks, it's from the right hash mark, and he pulls. And then when he's at the left hash mark, he seems to know that, okay, you can't really pull it. I mean, you could, but you're angled, you know, to the right when you're from the left hash mark a little bit as a kicker. And then straight on, he's missed extra points. We know that. But when he misses, he almost always misses to the left. And so he was lined up at the right hash, and I told my son, I said, this is not the hash mark he wants to kick from going this way. I said, he's going to miss it left, and he did. And I turned to my son, I said, you think I know my team a little bit? I mean, when you watch your team over and over, you know the weaknesses of your team a heck of a lot more than the Fox announcers or even CBS announcers. You just know your team. And it's not. And in fairness to the national announcers, they have to worry about every team, not just one team like you and I do, okay? So I just knew that was going left. I just knew he was going to miss it, and he did. And I'm not worried about the field goal as much, but that's six extra points. And I am worried that sometime, and the Chiefs have dodged this a few games this year, where he's missed extra points and the Chiefs have been able to overcome it, and he's put them in a tough spot. And yesterday he put them in a tough spot. A field goal should have only tied you yesterday at the end, and it would have beaten you. And Butker, it's got to be mental. To me, there is nothing physical. Because then he'll come out and he'll kick the kickoff through the upright because he's ticked when he misses an extra point.
Yeah.
And to Mahomes' credit, he came up and he consoled him and said, hey, man, I'm sure he was all positive because Mahomes is pretty positive when he missed the extra point. He can't keep doing that. I mean, he's such an asset on long field goals. He's an asset on kickoffs because the Chiefs messed around with him kicking it short so they could cover, then gave up that kick return to the Ravens. And since then, they were like, you know what, the heck with it. Just kick it out of the end zone, which I'm like, yeah, you think?
Yeah.
So he's an asset. And the kick that should be the easiest is the extra point. And I know it's 33 yards now, but still. And I know, I mean, Boswell of Pittsburgh had one blocked, and he missed one. So he missed two. So it's happening to kickers. It's not just Butker. Yeah. But Butker's missed six. That's got to be up there towards the most in the league.
It has to be.
And to me, with that leg and how good he is from long distance, it's hard to explain. It's kind of like a guy that's a 48% three-point shooter, but is a 45% foul shooter. It's like, how can that be possible?
Yeah.
And I can't figure it out. And all I can tell you, it's not his leg. It's not the holder. Don't even go there. I know he has a new holder. It's not the holder.
No.
If it's the holder, he'd be missing more field goals. And it's not the snapper. It's the same snapper he's had. So it's got to be, the problem's got to be between the ears with Harrison Butker when it comes to extra points. And that is a concern moving forward. I am worried that one missed extra point could cost the Chiefs, whether it is them chasing points to get two later, and then they lose another point by not trusting their kicker to kick extra point when they don't get a two-point conversion. You lose 2 points then. Or if it's just going to be a situation like this, you get in the playoffs and you're up 9 when you should be up 10, and a field goal and touchdown beats you. And And that's exactly what it came down to yesterday.
Yeah.
And if Carolina would have been a little bit more urgent or had a sense of urgency on their final touchdown drive, I think it would have come down to the Carolina would have won the game on a field goal. I really, truly do believe that. And Butker, that would be the talk today. The narrative today would be all about Butker missing an extra point. And I'm going to tell you something. He can't keep doing that.
Yeah.
But what are you going to do? You give him a big contract. You're not going to cut him. You're not.
No,
he's an asset in so many other ways. He has missed the most, by the way, from what I've been just texted. He missed the most extra points. So you got – remember when he kicked the booming field goals, three straight 58-yarders, whatever it was, against the L.A. Chargers to win the game? And everybody's talking about what an unbelievable weapon he is. And, you know, and this and this. Ever since that game, he has not been the same.
No.
I think it went to his head a little bit.
It could have. There's no question about it. I kind of compare that, like, if I'm kind of trying to get into my own mind about something that I've been through,
right.
You know, I kind of compare that, the mental part of that, what you're talking about, to being on the tennis court, right?
Yeah.
For me, when I'm serving, right?
If you have a double, you fault
like,
once.
Like my first serve is always better than my second, right? Because my first serve, I'm trying to power that thing. I know I got another opportunity, right? And so I'm trying to get that in. And I know how I need to hit it, how I need to have, and my first serve percentage probably not. It's not 100%, obviously, but I feel more comfortable doing it because when you get the second serve, you're like, I don't want a double fault here.
Right.
This should be the easiest thing in the world. I know how to play tennis.
Right.
All I have to do
is
take it off, get this serve into the box that it needs to go into.
Yes.
And how many times do I get in my mind and miss it because I double fault?
I did that.
And it's like, that's what I'm talking about. It's like the easiest thing in the world. If you start struggling just a little bit with it,
mental,
it just kills you.
Yes.
And it's like, I could go a match with, like, probably, you know, 2 out of 8 hitting my second serve in. And it's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
This should be the easiest thing on this court right now.
Yes.
Because I've played this game for so long.
It should be automatic. Right.
And then you get in your head and it's like, oh, man, you either hit the top of the net or you hit it over. You know, you hit it way too long because you're thinking about it too much.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you mean. You're thinking about it too much. You hit it off to the left. You shank it. You know, you don't get the right leg into it. And
well, I'll give you another example. I'll give you maybe a better example. Although, I don't know what's a better example, but I think more people around here play golf than they play tennis.
Sure, yeah.
So maybe people can relate to this example a little bit better. I think you have a very good example.
Obviously, how I relate to it.
Sure.
But yeah, more people are going to relate to a golf
and
analogy,
I play
no
both.
Doubt.
I play tennis and golf. And tennis, I did the same thing. I was in a college meet, and I was cruising along, and all of a sudden, I had two double faults in a game. I lost the game on serve, and it changed the match.
Yeah.
And then you're nervous to serve the rest of the match. I'll admit it. I choked the match in college. There's no doubt about it because it got in my head when I double faulted. No question. And I'm like, oh, my God, I don't want to blow this lead I have. And then I blew the lead. Once you think negatively, you're in trouble. It's the same thing has happened on a golf course to me. You have guys that they can be putting great. They're putting great. And all of a sudden, they got this nice gimme. And your group that you play with say, sorry, that's not a gimme. You got to putt it out. Or you just have the rule. You putt everything out. And you've got a 2-foot putt, right? 2-foot putt, and you make those all the time. And you've been cruising the whole round. You've been making all your putts. You've been making 20-footers, 10-footers, 5-footers. And now you have this 1.5, 2-foot putt, and you miss it. You know what happens? You suddenly go, I don't want to have that short of a putt next time.
Yeah.
I want to have a 6-foot putt or a 20-foot putt, and then just nudge it up close, and then I'll tap it in. You don't want that short putt. Once you miss a short one, it gets in your head very, very quickly. Now, the great players can somehow get past it.
Yeah.
But you're just a regular Joe on the golf course, and you're a decent player. At one point, I was a 12 handicap. I haven't played golf much anymore. I think best I was 11 or 12, which is okay. It means I shoot low 80s. That's not bad. But I remember a couple times when I played golf, when I missed a short putt, all of a sudden I was trash, as my oldest son likes to say. I was trash with short putts for the next few holes at least, if not the rest of the round, if not for the next week or two playing. And so I'd go to the putting green and try to figure it out and regain my confidence. All it takes is one bad short putt.
Yeah.
You know, or you hit off the tee, and you're a really good guy hitting off the tee. You hit it a mile down the middle. All of a sudden, you shank one. Now you're second-guessing yourself. Now all of a sudden, you spray it right instead of pulling it left. And now you're all over the place. And then you're like, you know what the heck with this? I'm putting the driver in the bag. I'm hitting a 4-iron down the middle. So it does. It's like a free throw. You make free throws, and all of a sudden, you miss two in a row. And you're like, oh, my God, what am I doing wrong? And the same thing applies with a kicker. You can tell. It's very clear to me. There's less pressure apparently making a 55 yarder because people go, "Hey, you miss it." Yeah, you know, people miss 55 yarders.
Yeah.
But the 33 yarder is the one you should make every single time, and you practice it a ton because you know exactly you can place it on wherever you want it. That's the thing about Butker's miss yesterday, and I know the wind was there, but he's missed six. They can place the ball wherever they want it: the right hash, the left hash, or the middle between the hash marks. Butker can choose where he wants it.
Yeah.
It's not like a field goal where you're stuck wherever you are on that side on the right hash like that 48-yarder. So he can pick where he wants to kick it from. He knows the wind conditions. They practice well before the game. Road games, home games, doesn't matter. And he's still missing extra points. That's mental, man. That is all mental. There is nothing physically wrong with Butker. You know why I know that? Because if there was something really wrong with him, he'd be missing a lot of field goals.
Yeah.
And he hasn't missed a lot of field goals.
Two, I think, now.
He missed one yesterday, like I said. 48-yarder, wind, dealing with it. I can let that go a little bit. Six extra points, it's got to be a concern. And I guarantee the Chiefs are concerned about it.
Yeah, I mean, they've only played 9 games. So.
Right. He's on pace to miss 11, 10.
Two out of every 3 games, he's missing an extra point.
Listen, with this offense, I'd almost be tempted to say, you know what, Butker, you're going to take a pay cut. We're not even going to kick extra points. We're going to go for 2 every time.
Somebody put that in our group message yesterday. When do the Chiefs decide we're just going to start going for 2?
It's a fair point.
Yeah.
It's a fair point. I think the great offenses should consider that. No matter how good your extra point kicker is, you should just go be aggressive and go. And once again, that's the halfway in, halfway out. Tomlin tried that for a while.
Yeah.
And then eventually got away from it for Pittsburgh. We'll get to the NFL Week 9 review in here in a moment. High school football playoffs, Smith Center and Beloit still alive. Smith Center had to play a game. They won a little bit closer this time against El Saline, and Beloit won because of forfeit. So Beloit will be at Haven on Friday. We believe the game will be at 7 o'clock, pregame at 6:30 on KD Country 94, KDCountry94.com, live video stream at NCKSports.com, via the Beloit Trojan channel. Beloit with a 4-6 record will go play Haven, who is 8-2. They got by Hutch Trinity 26-6 on Friday. Hutch Trinity was missing 5 key players, including a running back, their starting quarterback, 2 linemen, and I believe a tight end. And it was 6-6 at halftime. If Beloit's got their full disposal of players and they're healthy and they're good to go, I think Beloit will win at Haven. I think they will if they play like they have been.
Yeah,
put it that way. If they play like they have been, they can beat Haven. And then they could be hosting Hoisington in the semis, a team that they only lost to by 6 at Hoisington a few weeks ago. I'm not saying that would be an easy rematch against Hoisington at all. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is Beloit's playing their best football of the year. They will have 2 weeks to be off, and they've healed up. At the same time, it could be a detriment because you didn't play a game this past week to get back, have a little rust as well. So it'll be interesting to see what Beloit does, if we even play the game. Who knows?
Yeah.
When Beloit goes to Haven, maybe Beloit will get another forfeit. Maybe Beloit will have to forfeit. I don't know what's going to happen. Nobody knows. But Beloit at Haven. Haven has had a winning season since 2001. They first playoff win in 44 years in the first round. They beat Hutch Trinity 2 times this year. They're 8-2. But they're a team that they got some size on the line. But Beloit can beat Haven. There's nothing to say. You know, last year, Beloit won the quarterfinals. It was Andale, and let's be honest, it was going to be tough. We knew Andale was stacked and loaded, and they cruised to a state title. Haven is nothing close to what Andale was last year, plus you're 2A instead of 3A, which doesn't always mean that just because it's 2A, it's an easier game. But there's no question. I think Beloit matches up just fine with Haven, and there's no – I mean, Beloit can be in the state championship game with a 6-6 record. It sounds crazy to say. But I told you this before the playoffs
started. Well, yeah.
Off the air, that there is a path for Beloit to go to the state semifinals and have that game at home. And now you could go one step further and say if they play Hoisington, they know them, they played them, maybe they could beat them, and then you'd play probably a Rossville in the state final, although Nemaw Central beat Silver Lake, and they're the defending champs. So that's a quick look there. What else you want to add about the football playoffs?
I mean, everything's kind of going, you know, Sylvan Lucas and St. John's Tipton obviously saw their seasons come to a close on Friday night.
Great game for St. John's Tipton.
Yeah, and they had their opportunities. There's no question about that. And, you know, they're late in the game. It was a 3rd and long, and they decided to bring a blitz and try to get them that way. And Frankfort beat them on it on a 55-yard pass. It was a 3-point game at that point, and then they hit the 55-yarder to got it back up to 9. And, you know, they ended up being 11 after they got the 2-point conversion. But, yeah, I mean, there's just – little things here and there that go a different way, and I know it's an 11-point win, but that could have gone completely the other way, and St. John's could have come up with a win. They played very, very well, I thought, about as well as he could. They just had the one turnover that kind of equalized a punt block that they had for a return for a touchdown, and then shortly after that they fumbled, and Frankfort scored quickly, and so that kind of equalized that and negated the benefit of having that punt block return for a score. But, yeah, they gave everything they had and just came up a little bit short, but I don't think that you can really take anything away from what St. John's Tipton did after starting 0-2 and winning 7 in a row and losing to a team like Frankfurt. They're very good. Frankfurt is very, very good. And that triple option, or that read option, that it is tough to defend. I could see why the Coach Dusky had some issues with it with Lakeside, and why teams are having problems defending it, because that senior quarterback runs it very, very well, and knows when to hand off, when to keep. Got a really good ball that he throws. They could be a passing team if they wanted to be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, effectiveness of the read option is a little bit better for what they want to do right now. But Frankfurt's a very good team. But congratulations to St. John's, tipping on a great season. Sylvan Lucas, too. You know, they got beat 50-0, but they made some strides this year without question. And I think Ben Labrety's got that team going in the right direction for sure.
Apparently, Victoria needed extra motivation from us on our show Friday to get them motivated. I find that a little bit, I don't know, a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? If you can't get up for a playoff game to keep your season alive, especially for your seniors, I don't think you should need extra bulletin board material. But as a coach, anything you can find, you'll use. I get that.
Yeah, you take it.
Like
it.
I said, Hoisington probably needed that last year when they played Norton the second time.
Yeah. I told Parker, I said, man, you guys are undefeated. You beat the team by 30 the first time. I don't think you need bulletin board material, right?
I mean, it was kind of a blanket statement we were saying.
Yeah.
We knew that it was going to be tough for Sylvan to win. We weren't picking the upset. We were just saying, an eight-man, you know, something flips over, a couple turnovers, it can go the other way very quickly. It can snowball to where you get blown out. It can snowball into a situation where you can come back. All you got to do is watch the eight-man title game last year. An eight-man, what was it, two? Was it two or one? Where it was 36 to nothing? That's all you got to – that proves the point. You know, so it was more of a blanket statement that we made. But I told Parker, I'm glad that we could, you know, help you guys out and provide extra motivation bulletin board material. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, just for those that don't know, Parker Gates is an assistant coach on the Victoria football team. So like people that are like, who's Parker? What are you guys even talking about?
From St. John's Tipton.
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry, Sylvan Lucas. We gave him bulletin board material. Yeah. We didn't know we were.
Yeah.
We didn't go out and say Victoria's going to get rolled in this one. Say Sylvan Lucas guaranteed lock, they're gonna win.
No.
Now to me, that's bulletin board material. If you say a team has no chance to win something, that's a bulletin board material. But hey, well, like I said, I'm glad somebody's listening to the show. First of all, second of all, I'm glad that they're listening to what we say. And if the fact that they want to put that up on a bulletin board, by golly, I'm all for it. Helps promote the show.
Yeah, exactly. Parker's still a devoted online listener to us. So
we love you, Parker. Yeah. Thanks for listening. Let us know if there's anything else we can do for your team. Who you play next? Well, you have no chance of winning that game. Put that on the bulletin board. You have no chance.
Wheatland Grinnell is going to shock the world.
Wheatland Grinnell, the Shockers. I remember. No, what are they called?
They're the Thunderhawks.
Oh, that's baloney. They were the Wheatland Shockers when we played them back in the day when I was old. And I'm still a little bit sore about a clock malfunction, which was not. It was hometown cooking, where Dale Hurl could dribble the ball 90 feet in 2.6 seconds and get a layup against us. Now, granted, the defense wasn't the best, but when you figure it's 2.5 seconds, you don't think you can dribble all the way down the court and score a layup. It's pretty much what happened. We lost at the buzzer. So I'm not sore at Wheatland at all.
No.
So if this is what helped Victoria win, Parker, I'm going to say it right now. The Wheatland Grinnell Shocker, Thunderhawks, Thunderbirds, Thunder Kitties, whatever they're called, they're going to roll, Victoria. Going to roll them.
Oh,
I know nothing about Wheatland Grinnell. I have no idea how good they are. I have no clue whatsoever about that game.
Let's just say Victoria is a heavy favorite.
I was going to say, I, knowing the history of football and eight-man, I would say Victoria is probably the team to beat on that one. So, Parker, if you need extra motivation for your kids, which I would hope you don't again, but if you do, there you go. You can hear the sarcasm in my voice, but I'm willing to help in any which way I can, because I have no dog in the fight in that one.
No.
Okay. So the whole brackets there, Smith Center, of course, with a win, they'll move on. Who does Smith Center play? Oakley.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Oakley, a nice win over Sedgwick. So we'll talk more about that later this week. Congrats to Smith Center moving on as always, it seems, late in the season.
Yeah. It's pretty rare for them not to be at least this far into the playoffs.
No doubt about it. Let's go to the NFL now. Jump back in there. Great Monday night game. Patriots at the Jets. Can't wait for that one.
Super excited.
Super awesome. In NFL, of course, Broncos lose to the Falcons 34-27. Raheem Morris, former K-State coach, he's 3-1 as a head coach now as interim. He might get the job full-time. The Seahawks, their defense was really bad yesterday, and they got Jamal Adams back, Carlos Dunlap. They got in a trade, a pass rusher, and they still gave up 44. So the Bills win 44-34. And don't count out the Bills. I'm telling you, they're still a dangerous team.
Uh-huh.
The Ravens beat the Colts 24-10. I love how Lamar Jackson gets credit for a comeback victory, and they were down by 3 at halftime. Did you see that? First time in Lamar Jackson's career that they've come back from a halftime deficit. I'm like, oh, what were they down, 15, 17? No, they're down 3. That shouldn't even count. Texans beat the Jaguars 27-25. Nobody cares. Chiefs beat the Panthers 33-31. Chiefs 17-1 in the last 18 games, including the playoffs. Lone loss to Oakland, or shall I say Las Vegas, and that's who the Chiefs play. The Chiefs get a bye this week. Then they'll be at Vegas. Sunday night game on NBC. You'll have it on Z96.3 Lake. And I don't think the Raiders are going to beat the Chiefs twice, but you never know. Vikings beat the Lions. Look out for the Vikings. I think they're starting to put things together. 34-20, Dalvin Cook ran wild on the Lions. The Bears offense, I don't matter who their quarterback is, Nick Foles, Trubisky, they could go back to Jim McMahon. It doesn't matter. The Bears lose to the Titans 24-17. Titans now 6-2. The Giants beat the Washington football team 23-20. The story here, Alex Smith is going to be the starter now from here on out, as Kyle Allen had a gruesome ankle injury. He's done for the year. Apparently, they've given up completely on Dwayne Haskins, their first-round draft pick, fifth overall pick, which is crazy after 1 year.
So I don't think that's – Rivera's clearly saying that's not his guy.
Obviously. new coach this year is Rivera, so it wasn't his guy when they drafted him. And Alex Smith, mixed results yesterday. Alex was 24-32 for 325 yards, a touchdown, but three interceptions. Of course, they were trailing, so he had to force it a little bit. And how about the interception to end it for the Giants? Logan Ryan, whose wife was saved, almost died, but they lost their child. She was pregnant.
Yeah.
What a sad story that is. But he said he was going to do something for, you know, his child that had passed and for his wife, who was really helped save by the training staff of the Giants with some really good advice. So it's weird how you, if you believe in karma, the almighty power, it is kind of weird how that worked out. And it's weird to see another quarterback for the Redskins or Washington football team have a gruesome injury, and then oddly enough it's Alex Smith who takes over. It's really weird how that works out. So the Raiders beat the Chargers. Chargers looked like they had won the game, and then a review showed they didn't make the catch. The Chargers lose in every which way possible. I don't know. I mean, Chargers could easily be 6-2. They lose. Raiders are 5-3, 31-26. Dolphins, they're up and coming. I know Clover will tell you all about it now that he suddenly watches Dolphin football. He didn't up till this point. Dolphins, says he's a Dolphin fan, but couldn't tell you about any of the games because he's a bandwagon fan on his favorite team. Yeah, I hope you're listening, Todd. I called it. I stand behind those comments. I don't watch baseball anymore because the Yankees are out. And then he tells me about something that happened in a baseball game. I'm like, I thought you weren't watching. Dolphins beat the Cardinals 34-31. He had to be conflicted. Kyler Murray, quarterback, used to be Oklahoma for the Cardinals against his Dolphins. So the Alabama quarterback beat the Oklahoma quarterback, and Todd apparently loved that. 34-31 Dolphins. Cardinals, Dolphins, both 5-3. The Steelers beat the Cowboys 24-19. And this game, this goes back to what I was trying to say earlier about coaches that are not all in. They start out all in, and then they whimper and wilt. Mike McCarthy, they run this. Did you see the trick play they run the kickoff, which was a great play call?
Oh, yeah.
The Cowboys had nothing to lose. They're 2-6 going against the undefeated Steelers. The Steelers were like a huge favorite. And the Cowboys are on their fourth, let me repeat that, their fourth string quarterback who was starting, Garrett Gilbert, who had never thrown a touchdown pass in his career. Remember, he used to play at Texas?
Yeah.
He's been in the league for like 7 years and finally got a chance to start a game. And he played pretty well. And the Cowboys are up 16-9. I mean, you know, they're letting it fly, right? We're letting it fly. We're doing different things. We're doing a trick play. We're doing a trick play on the kick return, and everything's going great. You're up 16-9. You have fourth and inches. You paid Ezekiel Elliott $1 billion. Okay, not quite that much, but a lot of money. What are you going to do? And Tony Romo, former Cowboy quarterback himself, immediately said, what did he say? You go for it.
It's the NFL. You can get inches.
You can get a quarterback sneak and get inches.
Not even a yard. It's inches.
He's right. Jim Nance thought they should go for it. Everybody in the crew, everybody in America, America's team's fans, which I'm not one of them, everybody in America probably thought, go for it. And what did Mike McCarthy do? Guess we'll kick it and go up two scores. Like Tony Romo said, Big Ben in Pittsburgh's offense is not going to score just 9 points this game. They're going to score more points. They just will. It's a Hall of Famer on the other side with an explosive offense going up against a defense that's absolutely stunk all year and had played well up to that point. And I was like, dude, you got to go for it. You're up seven. You got nothing to lose. You go for it. And he kicked the field goal, and they didn't score the rest of the game. And it was just like the Texans kicking a field goal up 21-0 on fourth and inches against the Chiefs in the AFC divisional game. When you got a team and you have a chance to squash them, especially when you're an underdog and you don't have a lot to lose, and I know that Houston had something to lose because it was the playoff game, where is this intestinal fortitude? Because coaches start out doing it, like I said, and then they weasel out. This was a great example of that. It's fourth and inches. You don't trust your offensive line. You don't trust Ezekiel Elliott to get inches. Well, and I know he's been stopped on short yard situations before. You don't think your quarterback, your center and right guard can get a push where you can get 6 inches with your quarterback? Now, granted, I know it's your fourth-string quarterback. I just thought the message you just sent to your team is, I don't trust my offense. And you made a field goal. Guess what? You lost by five.
Yeah. Yes.
So, you know, there's that. Mike McCarthy's been known for making decisions like that. He did it in Green Bay. I mean, I'd say this again. Mike McCarthy was at Green Bay for all those years, and they won one Super Bowl. They should have won more than one. And I think part of that was Mike McCarthy. That's just me. I know their defense some years wasn't great.
There's no doubt part of that was Mike McCarthy.
Yeah. And when the Cowboys hired him.
He's just showing it right now. Is he a better coach than Jason Garrett? Absolutely.
I think so. His track record shows
I mean, just
is.
Everything, right. When you put the whole package together, I don't think there's a question about it.
Right.
But is he the right coach to get the Cowboys where they want to go? No.
When they hired him.
I don't think anybody thought it at the time.
When they hired him, I think I told Riley this or somebody, a Cowboy fan. I said, well, have fun with that. It's like, you think you're yelling at Jason Garrett. You're going to have even more reason to yell at Mike McCarthy. And there was one yesterday. Saints beat the Buccaneers 38-3. How about this? So yesterday I'm watching Fox's postgame show, and they're talking about, is Mahomes now the MVP frontrunner? And everybody on the site said, yeah, probably so. You know, don't forget about Aaron Rodgers. Russell Wilson's gone down because he didn't play well yesterday. And then Howie Long goes, I think it's between Brady and Mahomes. Well, if that's the case, it's all Mahomes now. Brady last night threw three interceptions the first time in almost 10 years, and he looked bad. The Bucs looked horrible, and I told you last week they're the best team in the NFC. I have changed my mind now.
Up to that point, it can just go all the way away.
There's no shame in losing to the Saints a second time. There's no shame in losing. But losing and down 31-0 at halftime, when you couldn't stop them and you couldn't do anything offensively, the Buccaneers looked overmatched and not prepared either. And the Saints kicked their butt. And I did say this last week about the Saints. If they get Michael Thomas back and everything is kosher, they're going to take off offensively. And there they were yesterday. They were unstoppable. 38-3, and the Bucs, the Saints' defense looked really good. So if you ask me right now who's the best team in the NFC, I'm saying Saints.
Yeah, after last night, yeah. I think, like you
Seahawks
said,
with
a healthy Michael Thomas.
Packers' defense isn't
very
good.
Not a healthy, but, all the way healthy.
Right.
I bought in Michael Thomas.
Right, yeah. Changes their offense completely. Yeah. Antonio Brown comes back and didn't do a lot. Didn't matter. Nobody did. Bucks lose big. So there you have it. Best team in the AFC, I think, still the Chiefs. I think the Steelers are the second best team, although the Ravens are right there and the Bills are right there, in my opinion. And the Dolphins are ascending. I think they're a team to watch out for. Anybody else left out there in the AFC?
I mean, not anybody that I'm over. I know the Raiders beat the Chiefs, but I'm not overly concerned about them being anything.
I'm not either.
Significant when the playoffs come.
NFC, I would say, you know, Saints are the best team. Who's the second best team? We agree on the Saints?
I was on Seattle for a long time.
That was my Super Bowl pick.
And now finally that bad defense reared its ugly head and they lost the game instead of having Russell Wilson.
Here's the thing. Russell Wilson's playing so great and he was carrying that defense because they were so bad. Yeah. And then when the quarterback has one bad game, you have no chance.
Yeah.
And that's what the Chiefs. Thank God Mahomes didn't have a horrible game in 2018 and they had no chance.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Scored 48 and still lost to the Rams, 54-48.
The NFC is just, for right now, I just don't know. If Seattle has a game where they, you know, get a couple takeaways or something, just, you know, like kind of like the 2003 Chiefs, right?
Yeah, right.
Like one games like that. They were terrible defensively, but they'd get just a timely pick six or something like that.
Right.
Something like that. But then Green Bay could be really good if they had everything together, but they don't have everything
defense.
They need. They need another weapon that they did not go get.
They definitely need more help on defense.
And they definitely need defense too, yeah. And so there's just so many deficiencies, I feel like, with some of the top teams in the NFC that when playoff time comes, it could still be Tampa Bay.
Well, here's the seedings right now. Number one seed would be New Orleans, and then there'd be Seattle, Green Bay would be 1, 2, 3. Of course, the NFC East, the best record is 3-4. Then after that, it would be Tampa Bay. Because yesterday in the NFC West, the Seahawks lost, the Cardinals lost, the Rams had a bye. So the NFC West, 6-2, 5-3, 5-3. I mean, the Cardinals, I was going to say, might be up there. And then they lost to the Dolphins yesterday.
Yeah.
So the NFC, there is no dominant team. There's no doubt about it. But the Saints, I think, have the best chance to do that now. Now that they're starting to get healthy.
There's so many people that said Drew Brees was washed up early in the season.
Yeah, he couldn't throw the ball more than 5 yards.
Maybe
he's just kind of
like paced himself a little bit. You ever think of that?
Could be. Could very well.
Because they've said that there's been years where he just like kind of just eases himself into it because he knows this might be a long season.
That's okay. It's working out all right for the Saints so far, and they look like they're the best team right now in the NFC. Saints-Chiefs Super Bowl, that'd be fun to watch. And by the way, Chiefs and the Saints and the Buccaneers are two of the top teams in the NFC, even though the Bucs lost last night. The Chiefs will play at Tampa Bay in a few weeks, and they'll play at New Orleans. So we could very well have a Super Bowl preview that happens during the regular season.
Yeah.
Very well could. Or how about this? The other options. Mahomes against Russell Wilson. That'd be great. I'd win a couple cases of pop from my buddy because I had the Chiefs and the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. That'd be a fun matchup. Russell Wilson, but Patrick Mahomes, wouldn't it? What about Aaron Rodgers versus Mahomes?
I want State to see Farm. That game so bad.
We didn't get it last year because Mahomes was hurt.
Mahomes got hurt.
Yeah, and Rodgers, you know, who knows how many years he has left. So, any one of those top four teams in the NFC would be a really enticing matchup against the Chiefs if the Chiefs, of course, get there.
Yeah.
Now watch. Even the Arizona Cardinals, Kyler Murray versus Mahomes. That'd be fun.
None of those teams against the Titans are an enticing matchup.
No. Or the Steelers even.
Right. They're just not.
I'm going to let you go get Marvin real quick. And since we're running a little bit long, I'll touch upon KU, and then Dusty will be back for K-State. KU shorthanded their smoked at number 19, Oklahoma. Turn attention to college football now, 62-9. KU's lost now 53 consecutive Big 12 road games, if I've got that correct. Les Miles on the Oklahoma Sooner loss, 62-9. KU was down 31-3 at half.
Painful event for me because I promise you, I felt like we could play with these guys and felt like we could run the football with them and throw efficiently, not necessarily the deep ball down the field, but that efficient throw. And I think we're going to be that. It's an ability that we have on our team to play efficient and be a better offense, because it's very difficult for us to critically look at that defense and know that they were going to be on the field for a great majority of that time.
KU is a little bit shorthanded. More on that in a moment. The offensive line continues to struggle for KU. Really, really struggled. Here's Miles.
I really think that they're, and this is what's, you know, hard, that they're capable. I mean, I really think that they're a capable football team. The football in the offensive line, I think they're capable of playing it. And what can you do with them? Continue to work them. We've got an open date, and at some point in time, there'll be some young guys shooting ahead, and if that's what happens, that's what happens.
So KU is short a couple of key defensive players because of COVID-19. KU starting running back, sophomore Velton Gardner, missed the game for the first time. An injury kept him out of lineup. He was their top rusher coming in. Jalen Daniels, their freshman quarterback, injured his left leg when he was sacked for the ninth time. He was sacked nine times by Oklahoma's defense. Oklahoma's not a great defense. He was limping on the sideline late in the game, so he seems to get banged up each game, which, of course, he will if he's going to be sacked nine times. And it was just a bad day at the office, and it was kind of a mismatch. We knew that coming in with KU going to Oklahoma. Oklahoma's a 38-point favorite, and they more than easily covered that, winning by 53, and they covered the over-under, which was 65, and they ended up being 71. Oklahoma had most of that themselves. It was pretty predictable what was going to happen to KU. KU gets a week off. They have a bye. And they'll be back in action in a few weeks against Texas. A tale of two halves in Manhattan for K-State. They led 12-0 at halftime, but they fall 20-18 to the 14th-ranked team in the country, Oklahoma State Cowboys. Some key plays in this one. K-State chased 2 points in the game, trying to get to 14 instead of settling for an extra point, 13-0 going in the half. They went for two. It didn't work. Let's talk about that first. Here's Chris Klieman on going for two. There in the first half, chasing 14 points.
You always are trying to get to that 14 points rather than chasing it later on. And let's be honest, we had a great play called and we just didn't execute it. It was open and we just didn't execute it, or it is 14-0.
Okay, so they like the play call, they just didn't execute it. Sometimes that happens. You have a call you love, it doesn't work, and then you look like a dunce because it didn't work. And that's the beauty or the ugliness of being a head coach. You call something, you have the perfect play run, and then your team doesn't execute it. And you're like, well, people go, well, why'd you run that play? Why didn't you kick the extra point? But had he made it, had they executed it, and Klieman would be after the game, hey, that was a great call, coach. Well, that was really smart. He went for two. What was the thinking behind it? Oh, I like this play. We really loved the play, and we executed it. What happened on Saturday? Oh, we loved this play, but we didn't execute it. Here's Klieman on the loss to Oklahoma State, a missed opportunity for the Cats.
Our kids battled. They fought. They played their tail off for 60 minutes. We told them they belong on the field. And we had a really, really good first half. Kept them off balance, rushing the football. And then on defense, we were able to get off the field and not sit out there for 90 plays like they want you to. I think we were only out there maybe 55, 60 plays, which bodes well for us. But in the end, we had our chances, and we just didn't quite finish the job. But make no mistake, I'm pleased because, I mean, for us, the mission's the mission, and we're improving as a football team.
K-State was short a key player as well. No tight end, Briley Moore. Here's Kleiman on not having Briley.
Boy, it was kind of everybody on deck today. Briley's such an impact to our offense, and to not have him was obviously hurt us. And so we played Jax a lot more, played a couple of tight ends a little bit more. We're down some wideouts again. So, I mean, everybody needed to step up, and I thought, once again, that our guys competed exceptionally hard today.
So we talked about the two-point conversion, going for it didn't work, but they had a play they liked. I don't have a big problem with that per se, because like I said, if you get it, you look like a genius as a coach. If you don't, you're like, oh, why'd you chase points, and you should have kicked the extra point. That's easy after the fact. As a coach, you call for something. I know it, even coaching your K team baseball. We have a play on, a trick play to try to get a runner caught between third and home, and then we don't execute the rundown and they score. Was that the coach's fault? In fairness, no. It was we didn't execute as a team. Maybe it's our fault because we didn't practice it enough. In practice, you know, that could be. But you have a play, you didn't execute it. Simple as that. It was still the right call, you just didn't execute it. Sometimes you make the wrong call, get lucky, and you execute. You know, like, hey, we botched the extra point, but somehow we threw the ball in the end zone as a prayer from the holder, and we got 2 points. Well, that was brilliant. No, that wasn't the plan, but I will take it, that type of thing. But the big play, obviously, was the fumble return for a touchdown. I mean, that changed everything.
The whole thing. Yeah, I mean, there's right. That no was the doubt. Play. It's... It's pretty much a wrap. I mean, give them credit. They fought back and got down, got the ball back, went down and scored. You know, the only thing that's in your mind about all that after all that happens is if you kick the one, you can kick the one to tie it to send it to overtime. But at the same time, how hypocritical would it be for you and me to be here like, oh, we want coaches to be more aggressive. Right. It's and a different game. Yes, oh, he shouldn't have gone for two. It just messed it all up. But no, what he said is right. And it was a very short clip, and he understands what he said is right. Mm-hmm. That we had the play called. It was perfect. It was ready. Phil Brooks didn't catch the ball, and they didn't execute it, right? It was there.
And they had planned it all week, waiting for the opportunity, and were planning on doing it at some point in time, and they thought that was the right time, and it was the right time, and they didn't execute it.
And obviously, once you see the decision, you see the play, how it played out, it's a lot easier to stomach that, they went for two, because this play should have worked. It should have been 2 points.
Should have.
And so, like you said, you know, it should be 14-0. Instead, it's 12. But then as the game goes on, you'll start second-guessing, and then you can do the hindsight 20-20 thing to where, okay, well, if Blake Lynch makes an extra point there, it's 13-0. Now it's 20-19.
Right.
And all we got to do. But at the same time, there could be any other things that could happen during the course of a game after that two-pointer.
Right.
So hindsight's 20-20 is an easy kind of deal in a game like that.
Right, I don't have a problem with a two-point call per se. Usually when you do that, it's when you've missed an extra point, though.
Yeah.
Whereas there, they had two field goals, and then they went to get the 14. I think what you have to do in that situation, once you go for two early in a game like that on your first touchdown, I think you should just go for two every time. Now, it depends on, obviously, if you make it or you don't make it the first time, but in essence, that's what K-State did from there on out, which they had to, of course, at the
end.
They
had one more opportunity.
That's right.
They only had two, and they did. They had to.
And they didn't get it. But the key play, of course, I mean, you know, you're driving, and you're down 13-12. That's a backbreaker.
No doubt about it, 100%.
I mean, K-State's defense played well. This is a missed opportunity, man. I mean, Oklahoma State didn't do hardly anything offensively in the first half. I think the first three or four possessions, they were like three and out for the most part. I mean, K-State did everything they needed to do to be up 12-0 at halftime, whether it's 12-13, 14-0. And then, you know, Oklahoma State, you know, get that big fumble recovery for a touchdown. And listen, it's 78 or 79, 80% chance. And we know this because we talked about with K-State before. It applies in the NFL as well. If you get a special teams touchdown or a defensive touchdown, your chances of winning the game go up exponentially.
Yes.
And that's what Oklahoma State did. They kind of gave K-State a dose of their own medicine, getting that defensive touchdown, because the defense of K-State held them to 13 points. And if you do that, you should win that game.
Yes.
But they didn't. And that comes back to K-State not having playmakers. One of them, depending on you want to call him playmaker, Briley Moore, was out. Deuce Vaughn was held in check again. Malik Knowles, back injury, had only two catches. And you got a freshman quarterback that can't do it himself. So somebody's got to step up and make plays on offense, and nobody did that.
Did not happen.
And we knew that was a problem going in. You know, no surprise.
I mean, like I said, we talked about it on Friday. So K-State get an offense or non-defensive touchdown, and the other team did it.
And they still only lost by two.
Yeah, and so, but they can be 100% difference makers. And
So here's the Big 12 race. It's a tough loss for K-State. Texas got by West Virginia 17-13. Oklahoma blew out KU, as I already talked about, 62-9. TCU wins 34-18 over Texas Tech. K-State loses 20-18. And Baylor had a chance and couldn't finish. Iowa State won 38-31. So this Saturday, just two Big 12 games, TCU at West Virginia, Baylor at Texas Tech. None of those have any real impact on the Big 12 race. 2 weeks from now, it's Texas at Kansas, Oklahoma State at Oklahoma Bedlam, and that's a big game there. And K-State at Iowa State, also a huge game. So you look at the standings in the Big 12. Iowa State's 5-1, Oklahoma State 4-1. K-State's still there, though, 4-2. Texas 4-2, Oklahoma 4-2. And like we said, Texas and Oklahoma back in this thing. And, you know, K-State's going to have to win out, more than likely, to get into the Big 12 title game.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to win their final three road games, or not road games, but Big 12 games. And, you know, you look at K-State's schedule. I'm trying to pull it up here. They will have at Iowa State, not going to be easy, clearly, but 2 weeks to prepare. At Baylor, you'd say that's a winnable game, but they've had their struggles in Baylor before. And then they host Texas. So they're all winnable. They're all winnable. You know, Travis Tannehill said a couple weeks when we had him on the show that if K-State, basically he was saying if they finished with three conference losses, that would still be a really great year for K-State. And he looked at the schedule ahead of time, and that's what he kind of was predicting. When you sit here, two conference losses, I think if you do pick these games, you would say at Iowa State, maybe a loss. At Baylor, win. Texas could go either way. But you might, if you're a K-State fan, I think you'll say we could easily win two or three, but we're not going to win all three.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Which would put you
at the way they're playing right now, I don't feel like they'll get all three.
Right, which puts you at 6-3 in the Big 12. Which before the season, if you told K-State fans you're going to go 6-3 in the Big 12, you would have taken it, right?
100%.
Absolutely. Okay, Nebraska loses Northwestern. They had their opportunities in this game. They didn't get it done. Quarterback plays. Now I might have a quarterback controversy with McCaffrey and Martinez. Martinez still makes a few mistakes every game. You just kind of scratch your head, and he's plenty experienced. But Scott Frost says this game is all on him. His team only scored 13 points. He says that's his fault.
I told him it's my fault. I told him it's on me. And it is. We talked all week going into this game about not making the mistakes that get ourselves beat. These guys played their butt off. Our defense played their butt off. And other than giving up a punt return and a kick return and short fields, I thought the defense played really well, created two turnovers, got us 7 points. Offensively, we had the ball down there. We got to punch it in. Had two field goals in the first half instead of two touchdowns, missed another field goal, two interceptions. To come away with 13 points is inexcusable, and that's my fault.
Frost takes the responsibility. Nebraska now 0-2 on the season. Other top 25 games. Miami still is alive in the ACC race. 44-41 over North Carolina State. They're ranked 11th. Lookout number 9, BYU is undefeated. They roll Boise State 51-17. Hey, Michigan not going to be ranked finally. About time. They lose to Indiana 38-21. Did you see the Liberty-Virginia Tech ending to that game?
Yeah.
Virginia Tech blocked a field goal, returned it for a touchdown. Liberty was lined up for a game-winning field goal. Virginia Tech blocked it, returned it for a touchdown, but hold on a minute. Virginia Tech called a timeout to ice the kicker. So the kicker got to re-kick it, and he made it to win the game. Virginia Tech, had they not called the timeout, or maybe called it sooner, then they would have never blocked it and returned it for a touchdown. So that backfired. We mentioned Texas' win. How about USC? They came back and beat Arizona State 28-27. Arizona State found a way to lose that game. SMU beat Temple 47-23, and Florida beat number 5 Georgia 44-28. Cincinnati still undefeated number 6. They beat Houston 38-10, and A&M rolls South Carolina 48-3, and Oregon beat Stanford 35-14. Ohio State over Rutgers 49-27. Coastal Carolina still undefeated. They beat South Alabama 23-6. And the big game of the weekend, Notre Dame won in double overtime over Clemson. Clemson without their starting quarterback Trevor Lawrence due to COVID, without three defensive starters, and Notre Dame still barely beat them. But still a great win for Notre Dame because, I'll tell you what, the Clemson backup quarterback, he's pretty good. Freshman, threw for over 400 yards. He's really good. Notre Dame won 47-40 in double overtime. That was a terrific game. The thing is, they're going to play again more than likely, I would think. And yeah, the 36-game winning streak in the regular season of Clemson was snapped, fourth longest streak in college football history. I think there'll be a rematch in the ACC title game between Notre Dame and Clemson, although Miami could be the one that breaks up that. And I would say Clemson's still going to go to the playoff because I think in a rematch, if everybody's at full strength, Clemson's the better team. Agree?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Okay.
I feel like they're going to get Trevor back. They're going to start feeling better, and then ACC championship, they win.
They'll be.
They're still in all right shape.
Top 25 now. Alabama number 1. Notre Dame's 2. Ohio State 3. Clemson falls to 4. A&M 5. Florida now moves up to 6 with their win over Georgia. Big 12. Oklahoma State stays at number 14. Iowa State's up to 17. Oklahoma up to 18. And that's the and Texas now, of course, is back in the top 25 at 21. Those are the latest rankings. Michigan did fall out of the top 25. And we end with NASCAR, where we began with our NASCAR Today, the kickoff the shows we do every single weekday morning here on the Sports Ticket. And it was a familiar name that is atop NASCAR.
The 24-year-old from Dawsonville, Georgia, is about to join his father, Awesomeville, in elite company. Chase Elliott is a NASCAR Cup Series champion.
Yep, Chase Elliott gets it done, the son of Bill Elliott. That tells you how old I am. I remember when Bill was winning the NASCAR Cup, the Winston Cup, back in 1988. Here's Elliott on winning the championship, and I believe he's only 24.
Man, I'm at a loss for words. This is unbelievable. I just, we did it. I mean, we did it. That's all I got to tell you. Unreal. Championship crew chief Alan Gustafson is now a NASCAR Cup Series champion and very deserving. I just can't say enough about our group. You know, I feel like we took some really big strides this year, and last week was a huge one. To come out of that with a win and a shot to come here and have a chance to race is unbelievable, you know, and heck, I don't know. I don't even know. This is unreal.
Chase Elliott, age of 24, atop the NASCAR throne with the championship over the weekend. One more nugget before we let you go. Sergio Garcia has tested positive for COVID-19 and has to withdraw from the Masters, which is going to start. Is that the end of this week they're going to start that, the Masters?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So Sergio has to withdraw because of COVID-19. And not sports related, but in a way it can be because there were sports questions asked on the show. Jeopardy host Alex Trebek passing away at the age of 80. Over the weekend, long battle with cancer, and he worked all the way up towards the end. Alex Trebek, one of the best game show hosts you'll ever find, and he hosted Jeopardy for 36 years. The Canadian-American ends up passing away at the age of 80 over the weekend.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.